Okay, we're on chapter 4 now, and whereas chapter 3 was 92 cards, chapter 4 is 238 cards. Unbelievable. So, what I've decided to do is give up sleeping. Who needs it? This chapter is going to take me some time. But by the time you hear this, it'll all be done. So just get your popcorn and let's start. Chapter 4, Handoff to the Pleiadians. I'm reading the book UFO Contact from the Pleiadians by Wendell Stevens. After silence, an almost total absence of contact with extraterrestrial entities for nearly 10 years, they suddenly and somewhat unexpectedly returned when Semyasi of the Pleiadian expedition team to this locality made her first rendezvous with Meyer on a spot pre-selected by them, to which Meyer was directed by inspiration. That contact was a face-to-face meeting in a wooded meadow in a forest preserve near Hinwil, where the ET cosmonaut held a lengthy conversation articulated in excellent German in Meyer's familiar dialect. How do you like that? The lady sprechen Sie Deutsch. That meeting took place in mid-afternoon in broad daylight on the 28th of January, 1975. After that contact, Edward Billy Meyer sat down to write what he could remember of the remarkable exchange, and then discovered that it was coming through to him rapidly, including the whole dialogue, word for word, just as though he had recorded it. How would you like to have that for your biochemistry lecture? Later he found that the dialogue was in fact recorded by the extraterrestrials, our distant relatives, and was being mechanically, telepathically played back to him from a computer-like device aboard the ship, and he was receiving it in a form of automatic writing. The writing came faster than he could normally write. How's that for advanced technology? Later, after Meyer had been loaned a manual typewriter of considerable age and well used, the Pleiadians asked to borrow it for examination, and Billy took it to them on the next contact. They brought it back to him a few days later, and when Meyer found that when he sat down to hunt and peck out his notes, the message came through almost as rapidly as the writing on his old typewriter, working it with only one finger on his single hand in a kind of automatic typing, again transmitted from the computer aboard the ship. The Pleiadians had reprogrammed it to transmit in a different way. Amazing. That's how he was able to type 60 words a minute with one hand. He cheated! Still later, an anonymous donor had given him an IBM Selectronic electric typewriter. The transmission of the notes was shifted to it in the same way, and Meyer was able to receive the transmission at a rate of over 60 words a minute with one finger under the mechano-telepathic control from the ship. We have recordings of this automatic typing. Well, I would like to see them. As the level of imparted information increased in sensitivity, the ETs began informing Meyer of certain things he could reveal to no other Earthman, things that he needed to know for his own understanding only. Then he discovered that some of the dialogue was being left out of the text and the automatic retransmission. When he questioned this, the Pleiadians told him that they were withholding some of the sensitive information for his own good. What he did not remember could not be compromised. That resulted in one of Meyer's first serious arguments with the ETs, and he finally obtained a concession from them in this respect. Oh, he's fighting back. In these meetings with the extraterrestrials, there was a variety of exchange. There were discourses, occasional humor, discussions, arguments, and agreements. Attaboy, stand up to him. There were even some outright threats by one, then the other, but the contacts were generally cooperative in nature and continued for a long time. Those initial contacts with the Pleiadian team developed rapidly, averaging 5 per month for the first 6 months. Meyer was given background information on Earth and our solar system, and the humanity and evolution on Earth at this time. He was told that we are a product of repeated occupations of this planet by space-traveling humans, and that we, the Europeans in particular, are descended directly from their Pleiadian ancestors, who they say have come here and gone away many times over, always leaving some of their number behind. Hoo-hoo. Much of that narrative information is difficult for us to accept because their scenario goes back some 70,000 years to their last major return here, resulting in their occupation of our planet. Our recorded history only goes back a tenth of that time. Even more incredibly, they told Meyer that in those days, they also occupied two more planets in this solar system in the same way. Their descendants on one of those planets has already destroyed their world and all life on it, as we are planning to do here now, they say, one of their primary concerns with us at this time. Our history narrated by them describes some shifting of planetary positions in this solar system as orbital balances were upset, including that caused by the destruction of one planet, which also produced catastrophic devastation of other neighboring planets. Some of this early contact information was extensively described in our preliminary report of investigation and will not be repeated here. But there are other matters not pertinent to the presentation at that time and have now become of interest and will be offered here as we observe Meyer's preparation for a big trip coming soon. The Swiss Pleiadians have described their ancient ancestry and consequently ours as originating before the Pleiades in a far sun system in a group near what we know as the Ring Nebula of Lyra, for which we have called them Lyrians, in the same manner as we refer to the human beings from what we call the Pleiades. These early Lyrians, in their numerous migrations and their great space arcs, went to many other star systems and found suitable habitations and put down colonies, such of which flourished and eventually launched their own space travelers. Once these later generation great space arcs mastered the technology of harvesting all the energy and matter requirements they desired directly from light, which is universal throughout all space, they became completely self-independent of all other support and never needed to rely on any other planetary body again. Many of those, having produced their social ideal of environmental living and habitat system aboard the great ships, never wanted to go back into the planetary nest stage or eventually be forced out again. We cruise space as perpetual explorers, building new ships and new habitats as desired, all perfectly controlled, exactly as their society prefers. Oh, how nice. When are we going to get to that stage? There are millions of these great space arcs, inhabited by humans, cruising this galaxy alone. Some of them put colonies of adventurers on a new planet's surface to explore and report back to the mothership. And some of those colonists who have lived on that surface long enough to have missed the utopian living in space and who have spent much of their lives on that planet choose to remain. And thus another planet becomes inhabited. The new planet is explored and uniquely developed, according to its physical nature, and a new human society evolves. Such is the history of our Earth and our own humanity. This cycle of events proceeds ceaselessly throughout this and other galaxies. And this is one reason we find so many space visitors to Earth. Contrary to popular belief, there are uncounted millions of freely traveling civilizations in space, and many find their way here. And you thought we were alone. In another discussion on technology, Meyer was told that matter is nothing more than energy slowed down into crystallization, and that energy is light slowed down into manifestation. When he asked where the light came from, he was told, thought. The universal mind, the divine fiat, the collective thinking of all spirit endlessly, whatever that means. In the second contact, on his birthday, the 3rd of February, 1975, they discussed other ME contactees. ME must mean man of Earth or something. They discussed other ME contactees and activities by other extraterrestrial cosmonauts visiting Earth. And during the 3rd, on the 8th of February, they discussed the reasons for the Pleiadians being here and why they do not make mass contact or contacts with prominent people. A fourth contact on the 15th of February, late at night, described how the cosmonauts would learn to speak other languages, as well as discussing how they make the trip from the Pleiades to Earth in such short relative times, and described some of the methods of propulsion used. And they warned that, as our society begins to travel in space, we must be aware that anyone carrying a club will always meet another with one bigger still. In the fifth contact the next day, Sannyasi described the devastation caused by a destroyer comet and the origin of our moon. In a scenario reminiscent of the Velikovsky hypothesis, the ancient history of the early Pleiadian ancestors in another home sun system was also described and how they came to travel to the Pleiades. A much earlier migration to this solar system is also described and how and why it failed. The one-third survivors of the Pleiadian ancestors' original planet, after its devastation, evolved a new technology and designed and built the Great Spacer evacuation arcs in just 900 years, and began to launch them everywhere for many hundreds of years more. Wow, I'd like to know how their science works. The ETs visiting Switzerland are the descendants of one of those space arcs, which occupied one of the three planets engineered for human habitation in one of the sun systems in what we call the Pleiades today. They have experienced great gains and great losses many times over since that time. In a very real sense, we are descendants of their earliest colonists, attempting to settle this solar system together with an assortment of aborigines and human exiles from a number of places. In the sixth contact on 23rd of February, the discussion centered around the relationship between the physical and spiritual lives. The seventh, only 2 days later, on the 25th of February, took place in the late afternoon. Meyer was alerted telepathically, which was then confirmed in the usual way, at that time in a manner consisting of 10 short rings on his telephone, an impossible ring, because there are not enough signal cams on the bell ringing device in those telephones to produce such a ring. This form of confirmation was used to verify the communications for a time in the earlier contacts. Meyer responded and proceeded to the indicated site at the appointed time. He had no wait this time, as the contact was there expecting him. The initial dialogue went as follows. Meyer, today you called me yourself. Evidently you have something to tell me of importance, Sannyasi? Sannyasi, as you say, but you must keep silent about it. Meyer, okay, Sannyasi, I will do what you want and keep silence.
You're a dirtbag.
Sannyasi, so I want to tell you something now that surely will delight you. Within a short time, I will get a new beam ship, which then you will also be allowed to photograph from nearby to get rather good pictures. In my present ship, regrettably, the automatic radiators are built in, which means up to 100 meters, 90 to be more exact, would destroy your film. The radiation, as said, is not harmful to living creatures, yet, as said, it would affect your films.
How about digital?
Meyer, marvelous. I'm delighted about this. Am I also allowed then to capture the inside equipment on the film and undertake a flight with you, which you have promised me?
Niet, shagzashagum.
Sannyasi, you can fly with me when the time for this comes, but I am not to allow you to make even one single picture of the inside of the beam ship, perhaps at a later time, which I have not yet decided. Also, at a later time, you may be allowed to take a photo of me, but this is not open for discussion, because certain reasons do not allow this. Meyer, all right, Sannyasi, I do not want to urge you. It is sufficient for me when you tell me it may be possible sometime. You also do not need to tell me the reasons, as they are surely of importance, and perhaps you are not allowed to tell me.
You don't have the rank.
Your oppressive leaders will not let you tell me. They keep you under control. He's using psychology on her. Sannyasi, they are important, that's right, yet you err. I would be allowed to tell them to you alone, but you are not allowed to tell any others, thus you would have to hide it inside you. Meyer, I do understand, and so you should not tell me the reason. Sannyasi, you are doing well, but now I must ask you not to forget my order. Meyer, certainly not. How could I? But do you already want to go? Sannyasi, no. I only repeated asking it because it's very important. I really have time today, and that more than anything else. Meyer, this pleases me so we can talk calmly. Sannyasi, I am delighted as well, as it is comforting to speak with a human being like you. You have a character in your being very sympathetic for me, a peculiar manner. Also, your often extreme way of thinking and your philosophy attract me. Meyer, are you making me a proposal of marriage, Sannyasi? Sannyasi, laughing loudly, that's it. We would make a nice couple. Meyer, we need to have ideas, Sannyasi. Sannyasi, you surely do not lack these, nor as well your peculiar humor. Meyer, unfortunately my humor often is taken in earnest. All this kibitzing around. The conversation then turned to a discussion of Priest M. Rashid, a Greek Orthodox pastor of a small Catholic church in Jerusalem at the time the Pleiadians were using him as their contactee in that part of the world. He was also known to Ascot and the Dalles. After that, Meyer produced his list of questions provided him by the group of friends to whom he was confiding these contacts. The questions discussed the races of mankind on Earth, extraterrestrial bases on Earth, and the activities of the visitors, etc. Part of this discussion pertained to a future photographic event and anticipated photographs that may not be immediately released. Those pictures were successfully taken on the 27th of February, 1975, near Jacobsburg, Ellenburg, at about 10 in the morning, and again at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Another flight demonstration of 4 spacecraft together was offered to take place at the time of departure of an old-style spacecraft being returned to the home planet. The dialogue concerning this went as follows. Sannyasi, tomorrow I receive my new beam ship, which I have already announced to you earlier. For the last 3 days we have had 4 beam ships stationed in your country. We have decided to show you these 4 ships one time, for which after 2 days at 10 o'clock you should go to where we will offer you a demonstration flight, which you may photograph. I will not make contact with you. Regrettably, I will not have much time, because I will still have to do something for a mission I must perform. Thus, there is not time for a contact. To become more acquainted with my ship, I will perform a further journey in the afternoon, and I will leave it up to you where I can meet you again for a flight contact, where you may take pictures again. Meyer, it will be suited for me at 1600, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because I will be at this place then. Is it all right for you? Sannyasi, surely I will be there at this time, at 1600, on the 27th of February. About my old ship, I still want to explain that it is already some hundreds of years old. See, my car's not that old. And of the older type. Those older ships were built on a wave principle, which was used for control of stability, which now these types are being eliminated. In this respect also, my old one will be taken home on your 3rd of March by one of our pilots, and in the company of a second, smaller ship of the Explorer class. If you want to, then I can agree that you may also photograph them as they start on their journey. Meyer, of course, I would like that, Sannyasi. Could they perhaps come to... The schedules were observed, and Meyer did, in fact, get color photographs of all 4 of the ships together in the sky on a graceful flyby as the 2 ships were about to depart on their trip home. There is a lesson in punctuality here, and we, to our chagrin, received our own lesson in punctuality from the extraterrestrials. This happened when we were there in Switzerland with a film team to begin shooting a documentary movie on this case. We had hoped, all during the negotiations on this movie, to be able to persuade the extraterrestrials to put in an appearance on camera for the movie, and had made requests to them, but got no answers. However, we also had not received any denial. Sounds like trouble. During our many days on site, during the course of the years of investigations, we had learned that everything depended on conditions. Things did happen while we were there, but never on request. So we came to infer that if we got there with the right team, with the right attitudes, and the right motives, at the right time, something might happen. We already had indications that we had the right team, and now we were there and ready to go. We had been to the farm and had introduced everybody around, and the technicians had examined the sites and conditions, and first shooting was decided for the next morning at 8 a.m. Everybody was awakened and breakfast on time, and the equipment was loaded into the vehicles and ready to depart on time to make our established schedule. Just as we were about to pull out of the hotel parking area, a big truck pulled in and stopped, blocking the only exit out of the loading area. We patiently waited for it to finish its business and leave so we could get going. Finally, it departed and we left the hotel for the farm, getting there some 40 minutes late. As we pulled into the yard, we were met by Eva and some of the other workers in the garden there and asked why we were late, as three Pleiadian ships had flown over at low level at about 10 minutes after 8. And we had only missed them by a few minutes. Had we been on schedule, there would have been our opening scene for the movie. We never had another opportunity after that. Thinking back, our situation at the hotel was not unmanageable. We could have located the driver of the truck and urged him to move it so we could get out of there. But we took the easy course, trying not to make waves in a host country who didn't really want us there anyway. The flight demonstrations took place 2 days later on the 27th of February 1975, and again on the 3rd of March, as planned, and Meyer was ready and got his photographs. When the four-ship formation arrived, it consisted of the old 7-meter reconnaissance ship being retired, its new 7-meter replacement, and two of the smaller explorer craft, which were primarily remote control vehicles. But they could carry one occupant, who could also operate it manually if desired. One of these pictures of the four-ship formation came into the hands of Official UFO during the time Bernie O'Connor was editor and the magazine still enjoyed its reputation for reliability. It was printed on the cover in full color, with no caption information or data of any kind identifying it. Here then is the data for that cover picture on about issue number 10. A whole roll of color photographs of the four ships' flight demonstration was taken that day, but it was very difficult for Meyer to get all four of the ships in the film frame at the same time. He succeeded in getting more of the pictures with three together than four, and in many of them, one or another of the several ships was cut off in the edge of the picture field. When one of the ships flew very slowly close by overhead, Meyer could see at an angle up through and between the lower central cone and the surrounding under ring flange, and could see a blinding white light like an arc welding flare. It went all around the circle, seen as a gap between the understructure parts, and he noticed a difference in the amount of this gap at different times and under different flight conditions. This feature was never explained to him. Okay, apparently the book has a picture. I don't have the picture, so if you want to see the picture, you have to get a copy of the book. The picture is dated the 27th of February, 1975, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Jacobsburg, Allenburg. Sanyasi demonstrates her new type of ship for Meyer's camera. On a very close approach overhead, Meyer could see a brilliant white light between the central cone and the surrounding ring flange. It is visible in this picture here. Meyer wanted to proceed with more questions on his list, but Semyasi suggested that it might take too long to provide suitable answers in the time available on this occasion. In winding up that face-to-face conversation with the Earth Man, Semyasi said, "For today, this has to be sufficient, because obligations are calling me again. Regretfully, I have to tell you of not being able to come here for the next 24 days, because I have to perform a journey to such and such. Please don't tell the place. There I have a certain mission one has given me." Meyer: "What a pity, Semyasi. Can I still give you then one or two more questions when I will not see you for so long?" Semyasi: "Yes. Simply ask, for there is sufficient time." Meyer: "Thank you. Until now you have told me where you stay when you are not holding conversation with me. Can you give me some details about this?" Semyasi: "Partly I can inform you about that, which means to you alone. I can tell you this, but you may not publish all. We have our bases on Earth, as well as on many other planets, where we always can stay. Such a base we also keep in this land, Switzerland, high in the mountains, at such and such. I have there my main place of stay when I am on Earth, but we also have some other important stations, which are scattered over the whole world. But they are all so built that it would be impossible to find them when one does not know them exactly. But I am often on the go and perform duties on different worlds. I also go often for visits to my home planet, and so I often do stay in the Pleiades." Meyer: "Can we later speak more thoroughly about this?" Semyasi: "Of course, but much of this will be for your ears only." Meyer: "Nevertheless, I am anxious. The time will become long for me." It may now be revealed that Semyasi's anticipated trip have had to do with some operations involving the small beings from what we call Reticulum, a constellation in our southern sky. This note was recorded in early 1975. I did not have access to these contact notes until 1979, but in late 1978, Bill Herman of Charleston began to observe strange flying objects in the local skies, and in early 1979 he was involuntarily abducted aboard one of the flying objects observed, and those occupants of that disc-shaped spaceship told him they were from a planet in what we call Reticulum, the Zetas. I became involved in the investigation of the Charleston contacts in early 1979, before I had any idea that the Swiss notes contained such references, and I did not find out until the end of that year. Imagine my surprise to find such a connection between two separate UFO cases, and both of them still going on. Bill Herman was taken aboard the Reticulum spacecraft two more times before I finished writing up the first volume of those contact notes in a work titled UFO Contact from Reticulum, privately published in 1981. The eighth contact, which took place in mid-afternoon on the 18th of March, 1975, occurred earlier than expected because Semyasi had returned from her mission 2 days earlier than planned, and summoned Meyer to this contact almost immediately after her return. He greeted her and anxiously opened the conversation with his unfinished list of questions now greatly expanded. Meyer: "Today I have a lot of questions, when you allow." Semyasi: "If there are not too many." Meyer: "I don't know. My first concerns the matter, rough material stuff. What actually is it?" Semyasi: "Matter is a sizable idea. It's a solid form of energy, being sizable." Meyer: "That is evident, but how does it originate?" Semyasi: "The principle is very easy, but I am not allowed to tell it. But it is such that all energy can be changed into solid matter. It is also necessary to bundle the concerned energy securely and to concentrate it highly. Thus it may be converted into solid matter. By this, the elementary building blocks of the solid components of matter are generated, neutron, proton, and electron. From those, then, form the atoms and the variety of chemical compounds, which then in their different aggregation states form the solid outer manifestation, which is known to your scientists. Solid energy as well as the original energy are the same value in each direction. So you guys can make gold? This means origin energy is absolutely matter. And origin matter is absolutely energy as well. Here's the outlet. Plug in and let's have some gold. This means that without exception, everything in the universe consists of matter or energy. Both terms, energy and matter, represent basically one and the same, but precisely in their separate forms, fine material and coarse material. Coarse material is matter, fine material is energy. Meyer. Well, all right. But this doesn't explain my question. I namely want to know how matter rises originally. Sannyasi. From out of basic energy, of course. Meyer. You render too less precise. I think that before the basic energy, there must be something else. Because from what I know, always two individual units belonging together result in a unit again. Sannyasi, you are tireless, and you give me a predicament. Meyer, I don't intend to. Sannyasi, okay, now, I shall explain all for you, as far as I shall be allowed, though you seem to know more in this respect than we know about you. Matter is the embodiment of an idea. As energy, the matter is fine material, and as matter, just highly concentrated and condensed. One can generate both kinds by apparatus, which you already do in different ways. Normally, they are generated quite naturally, that is, by spiritual forces, which is preceded by an idea. The basic source for this is the creation, a vast spiritual reservoir, a factor, which again embodies the original energy. From it rises idea. The force of spirit, then, which and who again embodies energy, condenses and concentrates the idea to fine material energy, which then by still higher concentration becomes coarse material or matter. Meyer, then in fact the whole universe is, inside and out, only of fine material and coarse material energy, which is compressed and concentrated idea. Sannyasi, certainly. Meyer, but then what is this vast spiritual formation, the factor of the creation? Sannyasi, it consists of idea, condensed in itself, towards itself, to originate spiritual energy. We as well do not know much about this. Ramtha, another being who claims his origin in the Pleiades, offers a similar description on page 203 of Voyage to the New World, where he states, quote, "We have a kinship with the sun, for the first embodiments of our bodies is light. In bringing forth that which is termed a round of creation, or creating that which is called the modular mass, it was very necessary to have a source that the mass could come from. In the natural order of things, light is born of thought. Thought is the immanent all-isness of all that is. Light is its second principle. In order to give birth to mass, we must first have light, and we must have enough of it that the light can bring forth and concentrate and lower itself that it can produce the mass. To break thought into mass, you must lower it, and the lowering of its energy shall turn thought into light, and the light of its energy shall turn to a thicker hue of blue, and from blue into gross matter, and from gross matter into the object. That is the way all things work. Now, your mother's sun is a great source of isness, but the core entity is pure thought." Considering the many hundreds of pages of Ramtha dialogue, which has already demonstrated the accuracy of his statements, it is difficult to pick this one out as any possible misstatement of fact or inadequacy of knowledge. The conversation then turned to molecular biology and the action of the genes with respect to hereditary factors, and Meyer had asked if knowledge, or simply intelligence, could be inherited, and received this amazing reply that it could be inoculated. Here is Semyasi's answer to that question. This is by nothing connected with the gene, because intelligence is a result of spiritual evolution. That's what I thought. Spiritual thinking and its resultant spiritual knowledge, wisdom, and intelligence are pure factors of spirit, but which also precipitate organic results in the brain, which consists of acid substances. Those acids become the carriers of spiritual wisdom and intelligence in solid form, while the spirit still hides in itself the same essential knowledge as fine material factors. Also, as the coarse material form of life, everything is two-dimensionally oriented, in consequence of which the pure spiritual or fine material forms of life are as well existing in the coarse material form. In this case, then, this means wisdom and intelligence exist in spiritual, energetical, as well as coarse material form, organic acid. This enables wisdom and intelligence to become transplanted in coarse material form. This means, too, that these acids can be taken from a brain and be planted into another brain. By such, whole races of creatures can then be brought to a selected level of wisdom, knowledge, and intelligence, without each separate being having to pass through the different evolution periods. By this, even new spirit form, which earth humans may in error call insane or idiotic, may be given a more highly developed form of knowledge and life. But in this direction, your scientists have been working for some time and have achieved some success, even though this is not known to the broad public. Thus, intelligence and wisdom is by no means genetically produced, because they are alone transmitted and carried forward by the ensouling body spirit. Because of this, an intellectual or very wise human being may bear descendants which earthmen would call insane or idiotic. Also, the reverse of spirituality and intellectually deficient human beings bearing descendants of great spiritual and intellectual development. This is really only connected with how far the body inhabiting spirit itself is developed. If wisdom and intelligence were gene conditioned, then a new spirit would never find a habitation body, while the already existing form of life would degenerate and die out because they were spiritualized too rapidly. This is because higher developed life is always being created, and thus for new spirits, no life and development opportunities would exist. In response to another request to bring others into these contacts with him, Sannyasi sharply replied, "Have I expressed myself too little clearly? I told you already several times that this will not be possible under any circumstances. Me have elected you alone, where we also remain. Nothing has changed. It is known to me, some of your friends only want to contact me because they doubt your information and want proof. They don't even accept your photos because they are captured by distrust. They consider themselves to be realistic, which is not true. Their recognition of reality is not based on knowledge. They believe that only what they can see with their own eyes can be real, wherein they do not consider that they could be deceived by their own seeing. Evidence then is only valid if founded on knowledge and recognition, which means only hard spiritual work enables real reasoning, but never only seeing. I gave you the chance to collect photographic material so you could confirm your details in respect to the existence of our beam ships with pictures, and although you have a good many photos, some do not believe you. On the contrary, they demand still further proofs in the way that we should break our own good principles and take up contacts as well with those other Earth humans. This we will not do and will deviate in no manner from our objectives. I still don't want this. It is not allowed to coerce to convince Earth humans of the truth. We are only allowed to do what lies in reach of our objectives. And for this we have selected you. And you should spread the knowledge according to your best estimation. How you do this is up to you. For you are a free form of life. Explain to your friends that we are not willing to grant them their demands for a contact with them. It is absolutely impossible to concede on this. In every respect, calm down. For the com-